say is it a crucial stage? It's not because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws, too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people try to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing wet. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to the night's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. Want to thank everybody who's listening in. Whether you're here live, like to find folks hanging out in the chat room, already filling up quite nicely this evening. We have Bigfoot, we have Gary Comforter, we have Chief from Simple Facts of Life, and we have Boyd the Alaskan, the early birds in here. And hopefully they are just the beginning of a full house. Certainly hope so. Should have an interesting show today. Going to try and cover a few topics before the second half of the hour, where we will be joined by the former U.S. Congressman from Colorado, the author of Immortal Danger, The Battle for America's Border and Security, and currently serving as an advisory board member for the nonprofit We Build the Wall. Yes, Tom Tancredo will be joining us, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. In the meanwhile, let's just go ahead and dive in, because obviously there's a lot of stuff going on. Now, I will not be talking about I won't be talking about the Nike incident tonight, and I'm not going to be going in depth with socialism among the Democrats, because tomorrow night, for those of you who will join me on Wednesday, the day before Independence Day, I have on slate both Gregory Wrightstone returning to talk about what cap and trade plans on a state level really look like. But then in the second hour, I'm scheduled to be joined by the president of FreedomWorks, Mr. Adam Brandon. And we'll be discussing the Nike incident with him. So we'll hold off on talking about that. And I won't get into the AOC detainment thing right now, because we'll talk with today's guest about that. So what will I talk about? Well, let's talk about a couple of good news stories, shall we? You know, when you see stuff like this, and I am in full Independence Day celebrating liberty and freedom mode, I don't want to talk about crap like Nike dropping the Betsy Ross American flag design because Colin Kaepernick's a crybaby. I want to talk about positive things. I want to talk about good stories. I'm feeling like it's a time to have some good news. So in case you missed this headline, there's a 9-year-old boy who has now raised nearly $90,000 for the purpose of providing bulletproof vests for police dogs. Tell me that isn't awesome. 9-year-old Brady Snakvitsky, I think. I'm certainly not trying to butcher your name here, but Snakvitsky, I believe, is the proper pronunciation. Anyway, here he's from Strongsville, Ohio, and he has plans of growing up and being a police officer one day. So when he was 8, he was watching Live PD, which is like a modern-day version of Cops, and noticed that while the officers wore bulletproof vests, the canine officers, they didn't. So he asked his mother if they could purchase the dog his own bulletproof vest. But he learned that each one costs a little bit north of $1,200 a piece. Now, being the young and energetic and driven young man, he did not hesitate. He and his mother, they created a GoFundMe page to raise money to buy a single vest. The fundraiser then went viral, and it was noticed by the company that makes the vest, Line of Fire Defense Systems, which just so happens, Gary, they're out of Canada. The company donated a vest to help this particular cause, at least according to the Strongsville Post. That was last year. Since then, this young man and his mother have raised more than $87,000 to purchase vests for canine officers. The latest update on the fundraiser from a month ago says that the young man has provided 85 vests for canine officers so far and has a waiting list of 57 police officers asking for a vest for their four-legged partners. Now, this dedicated and, dare I say, this close to Independence Day, clearly a patriotic young man and his mother also started a fund that's known as Brady's Canine Fund, and it is designed to help this particular cause, which includes a page showcasing the canine officers who have received vests and where they serve. This genuine American hero, despite his age, told the local newspaper last year that part of the reason he respects police is because his stepfather is an officer. Quote, not a lot of canines can get the vest because they're pretty expensive. There are a lot of bad people that want to hurt them. I love canine officers. My stepdad, he's a police officer. Now, his mother says the third grader has asked his stepfather to become a canine officer. He also told the news outlet that he already knows what he wants to name his eventual canine partner, saying, quote, I have a canine name picked out. Heavy. I think it's funny. All right. So, naturally, this is just it's a freaking great story. And I love seeing people who, number one, see and recognize a need. And then, secondly, decide that, money should not be an obstacle. There are a lot of folks out there that are going to think and feel the same way I do about wanting to protect these canine officers whose lives are on the line while they're protecting and serving just the same as the men and women that wear the blue. And he just stepped up and said, hey, what about these crowdfunding sources, crowdsourced funding and, about 30 other ways that you can say that. And they stepped it up and they did it. And that is phenomenal. So certainly a hat tip to this young man and to his mother for supporting the endeavor. Because, I mean, how easy would it have been for most parents to just kind of say, you know what, and discourage the kid and say, well, it's very expensive and it's very hard to raise money and they will just have to work it through their budgets. But no, nope, didn't do it. Says, hey, you know what? If this is why you want to spend some energy and it is for a good cause, let's see what we can do. And sure enough, there you go. Nearly $90,000. And obviously doing some good around the country. So there you go. I can't help but feel good when I hear stories like that. Because, again, this is the opposite of what we normally get. And it also is one of those stories that, you know, it helps lead to feeling like there's still hope for the world. All right. Another feel-good story, although not quite as feel-good, but it feels good to me. The headline here, Dunkin' Donuts pledges to crack down on illegal workers and taking it a step further to reclaim franchises that don't use E-Verify for their hiring purposes. Now, I got to tell you, in the world of donuts, especially quick service style, restaurant style donut services, Dunkin' Donuts, actually really good coffee. Love their croissant sandwiches. I've gotten addicted to those. But I've always been more of a Krispy Kreme fan when it comes to donuts. And I have to admit, I do have quite the weakness to a good donut. And it's just who I am. And I don't think I'm the only one out there who has that issue. Because let's not forget, Dunkin' Donuts and Krispy Kreme both managed to survive the Atkins diet craze. And now this keto diet craze that would have almost no carbohydrates running around. When a lot of people are on a diet like that, carbohydrates go, they just go away. Donuts, they're loaded, especially the Krispy Kreme version. But here's the thing. I would be willing to forego the Krispy Kreme, which I prefer. It's me. And support Dunkin' Donuts yet way more than I normally do just because of this story. So here's the deal. From the article, coffee and donut retailer Dunkin' Donuts announced today. Today, of course, if you're listening live, you know that it is July 2nd, 2019, and it is just a smidge after 8 p.m. Eastern. They announced today, Tuesday, that it's planning a national crackdown on franchise owners who hire illegal workers or who fail to use the government's E-Verify employment eligibility verification services before hiring staff. The chain also suggests that they'll take action to retract and reclaim franchises from owners that they find to be skirting the rules, this reported in the Washington Examiner. Duncan has been taking action on the latter front for several months, according to the Examiner, even going so far as to sue franchise owners who refuse to abide by several key rules when hiring help. Duncan has filed suit against some of its own owners in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Delaware to reclaim their property after Duncan reviewed employment verification documents and practices, found violations at the subject franchisee companies, terminated the operator's franchise agreements, and then swiftly moved to remove the franchises from the restaurants. The 9 franchise owners whose stores were affected say that Dunkin' afforded them no ability to correct their errors and that Dunkin' refused to provide compensation for their stores, well, for their lost stores. They also claim that Dunkin' is suing to reclaim franchises that they believe could be sold at a higher price. Ooh, sounds like sour grapes, doesn't it? However, Dunkin's lawyers reportedly told the Examiner that the chain makes clear in its contract with franchise owners that owners must use E-Verify or risk losing control of their stores. Owners who don't follow the rules, Dunkin's lawyers said, risk sullying the coffee chain's reputation when they engage in illegal hiring practices and breach of their contracts. I kind of like the fact that they were referred to them as a coffee chain more so than a donut chain. I guess that tells you that maybe I'm not the only one who prefers the Krispy Kreme donut. But anyway, in the filings, Dunkin' also claims that it warned the nine franchise owners, and that all nine suffered from pervasive contract violations, including no employment documentation or incomplete documentation for a substantial portion of the employees. When they were warned to start using E-Verify, some of them flat out refused until they were told they were being investigated and would likely be punished. The chain also says that it will now expand its investigation nationwide. Now, this move isn't likely to make Dunkin' Donuts the pastry provider of choice for the nation's progressives. After all, we do know what happened to Chick-fil-A when they ran afoul of the social justice warrior mob mentality. However, speaking of Chick-fil-A, maybe they could get some good advice on how to handle the inevitable backlash that will be coming their way. But regardless, Dunkin' does seem to believe that what they're doing is protecting workers who might otherwise be vulnerable to greedy bosses or those uninterested in preserving workers' rights. And, you know, they've got an excellent point there, because if you are someone that is hiring illegals intentionally, then there is an angle that you are playing. And sadly, for an overwhelming majority of folks that would do this, that angle ultimately ends up being greed. Because, again, you're not – well, let me rephrase, even though I haven't even finished. You're not likely to pay illegals the same as you would legal citizens. You're just not. And why would you? You can get away with paying these folks less, unless you have somehow doctored up your books to pretend that these are legal citizens. In that case, you have a lot of things that kind of get in the way. But at the end of the day, I think this is freaking awesome. So I'm going to give a hat tip to Dunkin' Donuts. I may pick up a few more cups of coffee from them over the next few days, and I may even forego my usual donuts and spend a little more money there. Because they are clearly serious about this. And I do hope that they take this nationwide. Now, as far as the accusation that they're only targeting franchises that can be resold for higher dollar amounts, it seems to me like the first thing that you want to do, and I have some experience in the quick service restaurant models. If you are dealing with franchises, the first thing you want to do is make sure that you are not in violation of your franchise agreement. That's it. If Dunkin' Donuts legitimately has the use of E-Verify in the agreement, then I guess that means you should recognize that they're pretty daggum serious about this. I know I would think they were serious, but then it's just me. I'm inclined to use E-Verify even if they weren't. And I've been fortunate enough to work with companies when I, you know, in that previous career, back when I was a younger guy and managing quick service restaurants, I was fortunate enough to work for companies that, because they did have the interest of preserving employee rights as well as protecting their own legal obligations, and because they were franchises and or company stores that sold franchises as well, but they operated businesses across state lines, they understood that they could fall under the gaze of the federal government at any point in time. So there is the self-interest that comes along with it, so it's just good business to try and protect employee rights, which is also why when you hear these people whining about this push for $15 an hour and talking about the conditions that these hourly workers face, it's why a lot of it just is, well, I'm going to be nice and call it exaggeration, because the truth of the matter is the companies have a vested interest both in paying a fair wage, staying above board legally, and giving themselves enough room that they can indeed reward the employees who come in and do well. You know, if you're going to show up, you're going to give your best every day, you're going to take pride in the job you do, you're going to end up making them money, then they're going to want to keep you. The effort to keep you will often result in raises, which is why if you are working quick service, which is the most common field where you find folks that are working for the minimum wage, if you are only making minimum wage, it is because you're just not trying too hard. Either that or you really do have a terrible boss, and if that's the case, then you should find another job. It's the Trump economy. There are jobs out there. That's the good news. And as long as Trump or someone like Trump is in the White House, then chances are there will continue to be jobs available. So that's a good thing. All right, so want to give a shout-out to Kel, the red of the right, the infidel that your imam warned you about, who has joined us in the chat room. She is, of course, the host of Red Fox Blogger Radio that can be found twice a week right here at BTR, and the host of Infidels Are Watching, part of the Global Patriot Radio Network, which can be found, both those shows can be found right here at the home broadcasting platform of BTR. Kel actually was on the air just mere moments before I started tonight's show. And she had a great show tonight, had good energy. She was having fun. And I really do think that it shows when Kel is having fun. I think she's at her best, really, when she's enjoying the show and enjoying the interaction. And Gary Comforter, who's in the chat room tonight as well, spent some time talking on the show, and is often the case, was both very informative and very well-spoken and does a phenomenal job as a guest. And I tell you what, at some point, if I can finagle it, I'm going to have to get Gary on as a guest to cover some of these topics. But I say that to lead into this. Once again, we are swiftly approaching the first Sunday of the month. And on the first Sunday of the month, the live show, we'll bring to you our Canadian correspondent, Miss Kel Fritzy, who I was just talking about. And she'll be joining us, and we'll find out what the latest effort to build the wall in Canada, I'm presuming to try and keep Justin Trudeau out next time he leaves on a state visit. But anyway, that being said, just a great show earlier, Kel. Great job. Glad to hear it. And we have been warned that tomorrow's Simple Facts of Life from Chief, for those of you who are listening to Sunday's show, we've been warned. All right. And it's all my fault, but we've been warned that Chief is going to try to make this the most worthless show he's ever done, just so that I can continue to say that his show is almost always worth the listen. Anyway, wow. All right. Yeah, Gary, we'll get together at some point in the near future. Then I'll catch you in a chat room and we'll work on scheduling something, because I definitely would love to have you on. In the meanwhile, I suppose we are close enough to that midpoint in tonight's show. And so we'll go ahead and do the Edwards Notebook and the Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. And Kel is regaling us once again with the story of this poor little Kenyan dude that she was one of her topics towards the end of the show. Anyway, this is your chance for me to tell you. If you want to know what's going on in this chat room, come here live. If you listen to the show somewhere else, come here live. Get in with this chat room, hang out with these folks, and go check out Kel's shows. Go check out Chief's show. Check out Bigfoot's blog post over at bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Check these things out. They are phenomenal. In the meanwhile, this is Ron Edwards.
President Trump is sending 1,000 more troops to the Middle East, but is that the correct course of action? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards on today's page from the Edwards Notebook. According to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Iran definitely carried out attacks against oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. Acting U.S. Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan stated, quote, "The recent Iranian attacks validate the reliable, credible intelligence we have received on hostile behavior by Iranian forces and their proxy groups that threaten United States personnel and interests across the region." Iran has also bragged about breaking the uranium stockpile limit set in the deal that temporarily limits their uranium stockpiles. But are 1,000 more U.S. troops really to solve or change things in Iran? I say no, because 1,000 troops is not enough to defeat a depraved, ideologically driven regime. Either go hard for a swift, decisive military victory or leave it alone. The Trump administration cannot afford to get bogged down in a long, protracted struggle that would take attention away from draining the swamp here in America and re-electing President Trump. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on AmericaMatters.us.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
This is Dan Perkins from Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your Veterans Tip of the Day. Have you noticed that interest rates on home loans have dropped at least 1% in the last 6 months? Did you miss the opportunity to refi your home mortgage the last time interest rates were heading lower? Here's your Veterans Tip of the Day. Get focused and know the facts of your existing mortgage. So go to the safe or the shoebox, wherever you have important papers, and look through it and find your mortgage. Next, look through it and find out these three things. When did you take out the loan? The year. How much did you borrow? The amount. And what is the interest rate? Percentage. Write this down on a sticky and put it on the fridge and start looking at bankrate.com for mortgage interest rate. If the new rate is 1% or more lower than the rate on the fridge, start looking at a refi. Remember, a refi puts money in your pocket. This has been Dan Perkins with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
We built upon a solid dream, like nothing else the world has seen. We built a promise on a dream. We built a promise, we 13.
We crossed the land bridge, across the ocean, a long, long time ago. We tracked the herds here, we followed fortune on the glacial ice and snow. We came as sailors, searching for adventure, came in from the east. We crossed the ocean, followed fortune, and our numbers, they increased.
Before the people stepped onto the shore, 2/3 of the first ones to die, 'cause along with the trade goods, they brought new disease. When the cultures collide, we built a promise on a dream, like nothing else the world has seen. We built a promise on a dream. We built a promise, we 13.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for staying with me through that very brief break. It is now my honor and pleasure to welcome to the show for the first time former U.S. Congressman to the great state of Colorado, author of the book In Mortal Danger, The Battle for America's Border and Security, and currently serving as an advisory board member for the nonprofit We Build the Wall. Welcome to the show, Mr. Tom Tancredo. Is it all right, sir, if I call you Tom?
Of course.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Tom, first of all, let me welcome you to the show, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. I want to circle back around and get to talk a little bit about what the latest going on with We Build the Wall is. We've been following the organization since the early stages. We've been fortunate enough to have Brian on a couple of times. And I want to start, however, with the most recent debacle. Obviously, desperate to make headlines, still, I think, throwing a temper tantrum against Nancy Pelosi. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is auditioning for a role in a telenovela or something. She's went absolutely berserk. Love to get your take on that to start with.
Yeah, well, I mean, somebody really should. I don't know whose turn it was to watch her, but somebody should and make sure she goes back on her meds, because I don't know if she is really as stupid as she sounds, or she's doing this just for publicity, or both. I have a feeling it's both. But regardless, she is an embarrassment, certainly, to the Democrat Party. I would guess that Nancy Pelosi right now is trying to figure out every way possible to shut her up. And it's going to be difficult, because she is in the limelight that she seeks and that she gets only encourages her. She doesn't care about Nancy Pelosi or the party. She cares about one person, and that's Cortez. So, but she is really and truly terrible, terrible person. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't think that of many people that I can think of, but she is horrible. What she has done, the damage she has done to a great organization, the Border Patrol itself, the incredible, horrible kind of slap in the face to certainly the Jewish community, but to anybody with half a sense of morality, when she suggests that these detention centers are concentration camps. I mean, really and truly, there is a problem there. I don't know if it's, chemical. Maybe she's just, I don't know what it is, but there is, she does a terrible disservice to her party. And that's good, of course, from my point of view. I'm glad, because I think most people look at her and hear her and say, is this the Democrat Party? And if it is, I think I've been in the wrong place for a long time. And, the Democrats might look at that and think that they may have to change sides.
Yeah. Yeah, it is almost amazing at this point, if it wasn't for the fact that we've been seeing it for a while, the open and obvious hypocrisy of whining about the conditions of the children and then whining about when people are trying to improve the conditions. And you're absolutely right. This latest statement, obviously trying to get attention, but to sully the name of the Border Patrol and to really it goes beyond even just doing a disservice. It is downright on the verge of sedition. Because, again, they're still calling for essentially the erasal of our southern border, which, it's there as for a reason. We have a sovereign nation here, and we have a right to control who comes in and who comes out. And continuing the current policies only puts these people that they're supposedly caring so much about in further danger, because it encourages human trafficking and it encourages the bad operators to take advantage of it both south of our border and here north of our border as well. It endangers Americans and these would-be travelers as well. And it's just, to me, I don't even know anymore how they're going to continue to top themselves without destroying the party, as you kind of indicated.
One thing that I think has to be focused on and really paid a lot of attention to is the real reason why this is happening, why people like her are doing what they're doing. And, she's not the only one to say incredibly stupid things. Remember when they asked everybody, all the Democrats running for the Democrat nomination for president the other night, if they all agree that illegal aliens should get health care? Well, and they all raised their hand. Now, let me tell you, this issue, the issue of illegal immigration, actually the issue of massive immigration, both legal and illegal, of people who don't want to assimilate and who won't assimilate into American culture, is really and truly the goal. Well, I put it this way. No. It is the tactic that is part of a strategy that is designed to destroy the America that you and I love. This is what people have to understand. When Cortez or any of these other wackos go down to the border and cry at the fence and look across at it, at actually an empty parking lot, which is what she was looking at, and she was sobbing because she was pretending she was looking at a concentration camp, it was an empty parking lot. Well, by the way, with her $1,000 Gucci watch on her wrist. But
right.
when people see that, they have to understand it's got nothing to do with altruistic tendencies, with concern for the children, with concern for the people who have died in the process of trying to get here. All the things they claim, it's got nothing to do with that. They couldn't care less, because in fact, thousands of American citizens have been killed by people here illegally who should never have been in the country, who are in sanctuary cities and states, who have been allowed to remain even after they commit horrendous crimes, and they are never turned over to ICE. That's the real threat. If you want to feel bad, if you want to talk about a morality issue, that's the morality. So they don't care about these things. It is only one thing, and that is the acquisition of power, the maintenance of it, and the destruction of the America that you and I love. They know that massive immigration of, as I said, whether it's legal or illegal, and it's of people who do not assimilate, creates a balkanized, tribalized America that and it will. Do you know what Claude Piven, do you know what that is? That's a philosophy of two gentlemen who were Harvard professors, Claude and Piven, who put forth
Claude and Piven, yes, sir.
That you know, you have to overwhelm the system with people's demands for more and more social services. And that's where this all stems from. It is a political agenda. These things are simply tactics used in the strategy to bring about the complete, as Barack Obama said, transformation of America.
Yeah. That is actually something we've discussed here fairly frequently here lately. There's no kidding. For anybody who is not familiar, a quick Google search will take care of it for you. Cloward and Piven, they just came to the fundamental realization, and they wrote it down, that America as a nation, the way this republic was built, could not be destroyed from outside. The only way to tear us down would be to do it from the inside, and this is a big part of it, absolutely. You've been looking at this issue for quite a while. You penned your book back in 2006, and you laid out a lot of the points that are still dead on right to this very day. One of the things that I liked about your book is the fact that you broke it up into three sections. The first section, of course, was talking about what makes America great, essentially, the identity of the nation and the identity of Americans. And then you broke down several of the moral issues, and you treated border protection as being a moral issue as well. You were talking borders, language, and culture even before Michael Savage was. But what I really like more than anything is that third section is you laid out some common sense solutions too, and all of this would still be so applicable today. It's essentially a timeless thing. As long as Democrats are going to try to continue to keep this issue in play rather than try to solve it, I think the book remains a very timely, and I certainly hope folks will take a look and go pick up a copy if they don't already have one, and if they do, go back and reread it.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I went into Congress in 1998 with the firm belief that the issue of illegal immigration, in the way I have described it, was the most serious public policy issue with which we could deal, because it touched every part of life, and it, if allowed to continue in the way it was, it would destroy the America, as I say, that you and I love. And I tried to convince my colleagues. Of course, I didn't do nearly as good a job of that, of bringing this forward as the present president. I can't tell you how happy I am that he has done what I tried to do and certainly could not, was make this a national issue of national importance. And you can tell, by the way, that it has, that the worm has turned, and that indeed the issue now, I think, gets majority attention and support. And I say our side. I believe a majority of Americans now believe that there is a national emergency, that there is a huge humanitarian crisis on the border, and that no matter what the Democrats say, it wasn't created by Donald Trump. Now they're blaming him now because they recognize that this issue is now a kind of support that I suggested. So now they've got to figure out a way, after calling it for months and months and months, that it was a made-up crisis, absolutely untrue, bogus, faux crisis. Now they're going, oh, yeah, there's a crisis, but it's Donald Trump's fault for having open borders and encouraging people to come. Oh, God, it is amazing to me. But it is also important to realize that the opposition to any true reform came from two places. I explained what I believe is the motivation for the left, and it will bring them. And by the way, the attack on values, it's not unique. The attack is really on Judeo-Christian values that created and that were exemplified by Western civilization. Because the attack goes on in Europe, it is designed to bring down that whole structure. What Western civilization created is the enemy to the left. And so, but here in the United States, actually aided by the Republicans, because of greed and absolute disregard of the future of the country, while concentrating solely on the individual's immediate political successes or failures. That is to say, what do I do to get reelected? As a Republican, well, I pay a lot of attention to the Chamber of Commerce, which has tremendous power in Congress. And especially with the leadership of the Republican Party, because that's where all the money comes from. And so the two problems I always had in Congress was dealing with the Democrats on one hand that saw massive immigration as a way to enhance their power, eventual voting status for all these people, and the Cloud Piven sort of phenomena that they were trying to establish. And then on the other hand, the other problem I had was the Republican Party that looked at the same phenomena and said, yeah, we like it. Status quo is good. Open borders, good. Why? Because it provides us with cheap labor. Horrible to say. And, you know, it's even more despicable. Well, I'll put it this way. Both groups are despicable because they have no concern for the America, I keep saying, that you and I love, the one that the founders put together. And on the other hand, but at least it's logical for the left. They have this strategy. It's long term. Want to bring it down. This is a way to do it. I understand that. Again, certainly I think it's horrible, but I understand why they're doing it. For the Republicans, it's despicable, but it's also completely inexplicable. Why would you do and support something that will eventually tear you apart, that will bring you down? But as I say, you know, for some people like the Koch brothers, they know they'll be around after the Republican Party goes, and they don't care. And for many, many Republicans serving in Congress, it's how do I get elected next year? That's it. Don't ask me anything else. That's my purpose. That's my existence. And it means if I have to vote for open borders, I will, because I need to be here, because I'm a congressman.
Yeah, it has been rather disheartening for some time now to see so many among the number who I have no doubt that a lot of them start out with the best of intentions, but you see so many of them get to D.C., and then rather than doing the people's business, first order of business is getting reelected so you can get better committee appointments, because that's how you can do the most good. And so you fall into that trap of, okay, well, this is what I'll do so I can do that, so I can do more good. And then by the time you're in that position, you've been swallowed by the swamp. A lot of good people, I think, have been swayed in that fashion, which is why it's also really good when you see some folks who do stand on those principles, who refuse to fall in, and who actually look to put the business of the people and to put the country ahead of the party's needs. And so that's why it's always great to talk to somebody like yourself, because you clearly did exactly that. You kept your principles in place. And that, of course,
Sorry, go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say, I will share an anecdote with you.
Go ahead.
I would continually go around the country and speak on the issue and be invited mostly by Republican organizations, states all over the country. And I'd go, and inevitably, they after my speech, somebody would say, well, how's our guy or gal? How's Fred or Jane? Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say, well, they're lousy. But they were Republicans, right? And I said, well, no, they're no good, isn't it? Well, I wouldn't get out of the room when Fred or Jane were calling Tom DeLay, who was the whip at the time, to report my offense, which was, as a Republican, to go in a Republican district and say something negative about the member. Well, so he'd call me in, and he did it over and over again, and keep telling me, I can't do it. You can't go into the Republican districts and call and do this. And I kept saying, what do you want me to do, lie? I'm not going to lie. These guys are lousy, and I will tell them that. So one time I did exactly that. I went and made a speech, and they called and then raised hell, and so he called me in. And he goes, how many times have I told you, this has got to stop, that you cannot continue to do this? And he was, this time, however, he was irate. And, his finger read to my nose said, if you keep this up, and this is what I'm telling you is a beautiful example of what is wrong with Congress and exemplifies what you just described. He said, if you keep this up, you little blankety blank blank, he said, you're going to lose your, you're going to ruin your career in this place. And that was the most, right? That was it. He felt that that would be the thing to use, because, of course, it worked with most of my colleagues. And I said, Tom, I don't know how to break this to you. And I said, that's it? I said, well, let me tell you, sir. I not only don't want a career in this place, I don't even like this place. And from that point on, pretty much they let me alone. Now, of course, I got no committee assignment of value, that nobody ever provided, came out and did fundraisers for me. And no bills, the bill I had was an immense challenge. Most of them, they wouldn't even allow to be heard. So there is a price to pay in the Congress for not going along with the leadership. Not many people are willing to do it, because so many of my colleagues, for them, it was a career, And they recognize that they become a subsidy chair, a ranking member of a committee, get all their bills passed, get tons of support for their campaign. There's one way to do it, and it is to fall in line. And so they are, and many good people go in with all the right attitudes, just as you said, and promise their constituents everything, right? Only to, then everybody goes, what happened to Fred, or what happened to Mary? They were so good on the stump. But And I'll tell you exactly what happened, is that they determined that their career was more important than anything else.
Yeah. Yes, it's it is the standard swamp mentality, I'm afraid. All right,
yeah.
Let's switch gears a little bit, because I am curious. Obviously, want to know what the latest is going on with We Build the Wall, but I would love to know what brought you to the organization, because a lot of names that a lot of folks would easily recognize are involved with this project, and I enjoy hearing every positive update, and I love seeing you guys in action, but I'm curious, again, what was it that that brought you to the organization?
It was a guy by the name of Steve Bannon who gave me, you know, I had worked for him at Breitbart. I wrote for a couple of years. I did a weekly column for Breitbart. He was my boss at the time. And I have to tell you also, by the way, that's all I knew him as. He's the guy that hired me at Breitbart, right? And he would periodically comment on my column. And all of a sudden, you know, he appears as a part of the administration and the kitchen cabinet or whatever. I mean, I was amazed because I didn't even know he had that kind of clout, but there he was. And anyway, he called me about, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and he said, he said that there's this guy, Brian Kovach, and he wants to do this great thing. He wants to make sure that a wall gets built on the southern border, and he had started a GoFundMe page, and it raised like $20 million. And he said, but unfortunately, he didn't realize that you can't just give money to the federal government for a specific task. You know, they'll say thank you, put it in the general fund, and then, of course, never spend it on anything except what they want. So you had to change it from that to a 501c4, which is it allows a private entity like we've created to actually do the work, not just give the money to the federal government, but do the work itself, build the wall. An amazing concept in a way, but he did that. They changed the thing into a C4, and people were allowed to move from the GoFundMe into this C4. And they did, 90-some percent, I think, did. So now we are – the next thing was that we would be looking for properties along the border owned privately by people who were wanting to try and stop the incursions and onto their land, and would allow us to build a wall there. And so we finally came across, and it's, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds, let me tell you. But we finally found a guy in New Mexico who owned a brickyard, and it was adjacent to the border. And he was inundated. He'd owned it for, I don't know, 40 years or something, but in the last 5 years or so, the traffic across that border and onto his land had become such that he actually had to stop doing business. It really ruined his equipment, vandalized it, stole everything they could get their hands on, and he kept begging the Border Patrol and the Corps of Engineers to do something. Please put up a barrier here. It's getting horrible. And he had about three quarters of a mile of his property that was adjacent to the border, and then it went up this mountain called Mount Cristo. And it was a very rugged incline, 30-some degrees. And so the Border Patrol, more importantly, I suppose, was the Corps of Engineers said, can't do it, impossible, too expensive, $20 to $30 million, and would take maybe 10 or 15 months to accomplish, and it's just not worth it. So, you know, we'll keep telling the Border Patrol to try the area. Well, we heard about it, contacted him. He was absolutely, you know, excited about the possibility of actually protecting his property. And so gave us permission, and we went in. And remember the time frame that the Corps of Engineers said, you know, 18 months, but $27 million. We went in, had to get permits from the city of Sunland Park, which is that's a whole story in and of itself. Let me just say this. In fact, corruption does not stop at the border. Okay, just important to understand. And so we finally made our way through that morass and began construction and completed this 3/4 mile of wall up this mountain with steel bollards 15 feet high that were 10 times better. Well, the steel used by the government in their wall is 25-year lifespan. Ours is 75 years. The monitoring system that we put down deep underground can detect something 20 miles away trying to disturb the ground. If you touch the fence at a certain point in time at night, the whole thing is illuminated. We built a road adjacent to it out of concrete, not a dirt road, not even a paved road, but a concrete little road, and it's a big road, all the way up the mountain to allow the Border Patrol to be able to use vehicles to patrol. The Border Patrol has told us it is the best deterrent, the best wall on the border, and it really is. It's fantastic, and people should go to WeBuildTheWall.us. You can see all the videos of it under construction, its completion, what we had to go through. It is absolutely amazing, and it's a beautiful sight, and it's done, and we did it in 57 days from the time we set foot on the property to the time we completed the wall.
Wow.
And we did it for $500,000.
That also, well, I'll add that on, is extremely impressive. Tom, I hate to, because we're running out of time. We're going to have to kind of leave things there. But I tell you what, I definitely would love to have you back on, because something tells me there's some more stories that need to be told. So thank you very much for joining us this evening. And real quick, one more time, please share the website again. And if you're inviting people to follow you on social media, feel free to share that as well.
Sure. WeBuildTheWall.us. It's really and truly, I so encourage people to go and look at what we did. I am so proud of the team that did it. I mean, I'm just an advisory board member. I talk it up. That's my job. But these guys actually did the work, put it together, and it was a monumental achievement. And then I have, Tom Tancredo on Facebook, and anybody can join in and follow along.
All right, sir. Again, thank you so much, and I do hope we get a chance to speak again real soon.
As do I.
All right, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Tancredo. All right. Like I said, I think there are a lot of great stories yet to come. And, some of the things to remember is they're also fighting against a lot of local Democratic city and county governments. Conversation in the chat room has been interesting. I want to run that down real quick. Everybody hanging out. We've got Bigfoot. Check out bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Gary Comforter still hanging out. I will have to get with you sometime soon to see if we can't get you on here with us. Kel, check out Red Fox Blogger Radio. And Infidels are watching, part of the Global Patriot Radio Network. And check us out for the Sunday live show. She'll be with us this coming Sunday. Chief, host of Simple Facts of Life, and Boyd the Alaskan all hanging out. And they've been talking about Andy Go and the milkshakes issue, something else. But, here we go. That's going to have to be it for tonight. I certainly appreciate everybody being here, and thanks to all of you for listening. And remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in a little bit of effort, and more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Hope to see you tomorrow night, everybody. I'm out.
is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. It gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family. Using both hands.